Welcome. You're listening to Winning at Life, live financial talk radio. This is The Daily Wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, that's what Gregory's for. 504-260-0995, Hall of Fame financial advisor. You can either give him a call the old-fashioned way, or you can do the cool thing where you do the one-touch call from the front screen of the Winning at Life app, or you can send a text from the Winning at Life app. Couple things coming up today, including the numbers. You know, the rest of the financial news is on its way, but I want to start with how is the election going to affect your money? We've done that a few times before the election. We're probably only going to do it this one time after the election because now we know what the results are. And while, you know, the crystal ball is never as clear as the rearview mirror, we have a better idea. First off, largely, I want to say when it comes to big changes in the financial world and regulations, forget it, man. I'm expecting gridlock is going to be the order of the day. I'm okay with that. Gregory knows I'm a fan of gridlock because usually the stuff that they're going to do besides gridlock is not something I would favor anyway. But we're just going to go down the list here. First things first is Social Security. And the changes that were possible were more probable if the Republicans had kept the House. Now, they do have the Senate, and they increased their majority. That would have helped. And, of course, the White House wasn't even up for play. But losing the House means some of these Republican ideas are actually going away. So a couple of the drafts, and nothing was ever proposed on the floor of the House. So this was just basically rumor mill and what people were intentionally leaking. They were thinking about cutting some benefits, raising the retirement age, and both sides are possibly okay with ticking up the tax on it somewhere at some point, but no one really wants to put pen to paper because there's political fallout for any time you want to raise taxes. But it looks like nothing. We can expect absolutely no changes to Social Security, or at least I should say major changes to Social Security for at least the next 2 years. Is that a pretty safe assumption, Gregory?
Yes. I just don't think anybody's committed to increase the taxes in both the House and Senate to fix it. You know, as far as the problem a few years out that there's not enough money to pay out benefits, it's going to need a tax increase on both sides, employer and payroll. And I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't even see them fighting for it if it's going to be such a lost cause, because all they would do is get all this negative political blowback, and it's not even going to get passed anyway.
They're going to fix it when it gets closer to that. This is a president, I think, could get that done, but you still have this tax increase on your resume as president. He gets a second term. Because look, you have to go with some thinking here. Is some of this like, would this stop me from being president a second term? You know, I know I can't drive while I'm president, but he didn't drive before. So we know the car driving bit's not in there, whether you stay president or not. I just thought that I'd throw that in there.
A little random, but correct.
But I think that this would be more of something to tackle the second term, especially there are things that need to be fixed. And I think a lot of cases it's like, gosh, this kind of dings my resume. This bulletin board won't look good in my presidential library down the road. You know, I don't want this check off against me, which would be raising taxes. And it's not raising tax across the board, but some taxes have to fix that. And that goes for a number of other things that can have some negative pushback, but things need to be fixed. I think budgets need to be cut. There's going to be some government layoffs. And will there be some pain with that? Yeah, I think some things are too big. And that's what I believe he would do in a second term. He's that type of guy that would do the hard stuff.
Okay, so here's the one wild card in the deck. This is the Joker, Gregory. The lame duck session. Congress will reconvene between the election of this week and when the new Congress is sworn in. And although it doesn't really happen that much, they sure do theorize it about it a lot. The thing is you see these guys have a tendency to at least attempt to do things they wouldn't otherwise do when there's a power transition. Lame duck sessions don't mean a whole lot if Republicans kept everything. They would have done the same thing they were doing last month that they were going to do in 3 months from now. But there's enough people in there who are still in a position of power who know they're not going to be there in 2 months. And that is the wild card.
You could have a couple things get done here in the coming weeks.
Yeah, so the one thing that they talked about, a couple of bills that we reviewed, and one of them that squeaked through was that universal savings account. These little nuanced things that we had been discussing just this year is when they really got on board with trying to push those things. Something like that may squeak through in this lame duck session, but nothing big. Remember that thing? The universal savings account, or was that the official name? It was like the Roth without the... with a couple of fewer limits.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that happen as well. But it's just what we're looking at next couple of years is if there's, and this is major changes or major bills, it is, can the things that would get through or not major, where you can get bipartisan agreement, some of the have-to stuff that needs to be done, but not major reform.
All right. Now, I printed this article out here because this lady in Market Watch thought of something I didn't. Alessandra Melito gets credit for this one. You know what very well may likely happen is the return of the fiduciary rule. The Democrats control the House. Maxine Waters is going to be a chairwoman of the House Financial Services Committee. She's already been on board as being in favor of it. She criticized him when he struck it down, because it was an Obama era rule, and they may change it or water it down somewhat, but that is something that in the absence of executive order, they could put that in one of these omnibus packages. And the Republicans know this is such, you know, nuance.
Maybe I should bring you up to speed.
Okay.
I expect a remodeled DOL bill to come out that's more in line with the SEC. Let's say September of 2019.
That sounds awfully specific.
There's fall expecting that. Could that come a little earlier? Could it be later? I don't know. That's kind of the timeline I'm expecting it, kind of fall-like.
You're looking at me like you know something I don't. Is this Roger and Bell Chase? You're going to be first up on Winning It Live. Don't laugh. You're first up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. What's up, Roger?
Hey, I'm trying to figure out with inheritance. All right, I just got a pretty good portion of money, but I don't know if that's a taxable event, and it doesn't matter if it went through. It was a trust that when my relative died, the trust was, everything was liquidated, and all assets were accumulated and then dispersed amongst the living heirs. And I'm just wondering, you know, how does that, you know, I Google it and it says that under $1 million, I'm good on federal, but how does that work on local?
What went into the trust? Was this after-tax accounts? Was it IRAs? You kind of said everything's liquid and it's in a trust. IRAs can't be owned by a trust, but hey, they could be shoved into there after death if it's not handled correctly and create a big taxable event.
I'm gonna tell you exactly what it says. I got the paper from the lawyer that came with the checks.
Awesome.
I'll tell you exactly what it said. I know it wasn't worded quite like I thought it would be worded. Sorry, I should have had that available already. All right. It says that it's an unsupervised estate. It's out of Indiana, and it's a list. It's the last will and testament following the liquidation of the trust that he had set up. And it's got, the list of accounts is like, it's let's see, this one right here, you know, it's a Fifth Third checking account. There's a Franklin Growth Class A, Franklin Income Class A, Vet Trend Corp, Anthem Inc. Corp, you know, securities, credit balance. I mean, those are the big ones. I don't know what those are. But
okay, does it say anything about IRAs or anything like that in the mix?
I don't see anything that
okay. Typically, what's going to be taxed and depends on the structure and how this was handled. But if nothing's been taxed, then what you're needing a breakdown is what was the non-taxed gains. Like if it's a savings account and it's making 1% and that $5,000 in there made $200 in interest last year, that's going to get taxed. If you had an unqualified annuity that was cashed out, cost basis, $50,000, it cashes out $60,000, 10 grand's going to be taxed. You know, anything that hasn't been taxed is what's going to be a taxable event of that. You should have some details on that if it was not already handled.
This is, it wasn't a close relative. It was, you know, it's a second cousin, and it was his trust that he inherited from my aunt. And, you know, basically he was, you know, almost a ward of the state, you know, on the verge of that, and all of her assets when she died went into a trust, and then he had a will based on that trust. But everything, it's listed. I just don't understand. There's 16 of us that it got dispersed among, and you know, it was, I mean, for my status in the world, it was a sizable amount of income. And I don't know. I mean, if you got 40 grand, do you need to set aside, you know, a third of that to prepare for taxes at the end of the year?
You need to find out what the cost basis is, how much principal is there and how much untaxed gain. You know, what's the cost basis? What's the principal? And that above that would be taxable, and you're all splitting that up. You need to reach back out to who handled the disposition of the trust.
Be right back. Welcome, it's Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, your wallet's favorite show. I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. Now, Roger and Bellchase calls in and he's inheriting some money. Sounded pretty unexpected. How do the taxes work on that? And the answer, like so many of them, is, well, it depends.
Here, if I receive the checks, typically when I see this happening, and that's Roger from Bell Chase that called in with the question, typically you're having a breakdown of the disposition of the assets, what's being dispersed, and an explanation. If you've not received that, I would reach back out there, because somebody I would lean on is a member of our Total Wealth Authority, Jude Heath of J. Heath and Company, a CPA firm, and he's going to reach out and ask those questions. And he doesn't reach out for free, nor does, you know, typically people are charging you by the hour or such on billing. But you want to have somebody that knows what's going on there, and whoever dispersed the checks, was there a taxable amount or not? If it was, and it was in a trust, so it sounds like it was an irrevocable trust, so it had a federal tax ID number, and it would handle the taxes as the earnings came through. My instinct is, I think, is that the taxes are handled on this disbursement, but you need to clarify it, because we don't know if that was, if it was not, what's the basis? How much of this is taxable? James was, well, I would just save the money until I found out. Well, you should be able to find out pretty quickly. Roger, are you there?
I was reading through this letter. I got a little bit more information. This might help you there. It's talking about the an estate income tax return. So would that be handling what you're talking about?
Could very well. Were you given a copy of that?
No, sir. I got a copy of list of assets and then the how the money was divvied up and dispersed. But I don't
But it doesn't discuss if there's any taxes owed or how that was handled.
It just says that the there's two disbursements. The first disbursement being the majority of it is in this year's estate income tax return, and that the subsequent disbursements it says that they'll be under the amount that an annual estate tax return would not be required.
Okay. So it sounds like the taxes are handled because a tax return was done to settle up with state, federal, municipal, anybody that was owed taxes, and then the balance was dispersed out. And it sounds like the subsequent ones might have a taxable amount, but it's not going to be enough that's going to require the estate to file a return. So do you have a tax person helping you with this? Do you have a tax person helping you with this?
I haven't touched base with them. This all just kind of happened in the past couple of days. So I haven't had a chance to touch base with them because of work. And like I said, I just don't know how that works, because I know if the estate has a liability and they take care of that, well, the accountant and the lawyer represent the estate. They don't represent me. You know, I'm a recipient, but they don't work for me. They work for my relative's estate, you know? So
Roger, this will make you feel better, Gregory. And when you're filling out your taxes, on what line do you put the money you inherited?
That's what I'm trying to get at. Yes.
There.
When I do my 1040 at the end of the year, is this going to go in as income?
It should not. Now, once again, I would talk to Jew Heath and have a conversation with him. I would seek some help. You inherited some money. Don't get cheap on us right here and say, I'll just do it myself. I'm not going to pay. You don't want a letter 2 years from the IRS. You've got a windfall here. Just make sure this goes right so you're not getting in a bind later having to pay something back. Just square it away. Ask the right people. Call Jude Heath. You can go to my website, GregoryRicks.com, on the Total Wealth Authority page.
Yep.
And you can connect to him through that. Get the guidance so you can move on with your life instead of worrying about this. Just you want to make sure it's clear. I think you're in good shape. But that's guidance. You need somebody to tell you, this is 100% done. Enjoy.
And congrats, Roger.
I don't want to pay off a house or, a couple of vehicles and Uncle Sam come knocking on my door a couple of years ago, putting liens on everything I just paid off.
You could probably get this resolved here pretty quickly.
All right.
A couple calls and get them what they need.
Thanks for thinking of us, Roger. Jerome, New Orleans. You are next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you?
Hello.
Hey, Jerome, you're on the radio. How can we help you, sir?
Yes. I own a lot of businesses, and I'm looking to see that I'm the sole proprietor, and I want to receive my revenue from my CEOs, chief executive officers, like Warren Buffett or Stephen Hawkins. And I have these men that work for me. They're real billionaires, and I want to get some money to spend.
Well, does that mean you own stock in these companies? You own the whole company, and Warren Buffett's an employee of yours?
And I have zero tax, double bracket zero tax.
Okay. Jerome, I'm unable to help you out on that. Thanks for the call. Have a great day.
All right. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. Hey, look, they can't all be home runs, Gregory. All right. Back to where we were, if we can even remember.
I was just going to say, I'd be pretty good shape if Warren Buffett was working for me. He's worth quite a bit of money. And I'd be concerned if Stephen Hawking was working for me, because he passed not too long ago. So there's a gap.
He's not working for anybody.
No, he's not working for anybody.
Okay. Is there any explanation behind that little gleam in your eye when you said September 2019 on the fiduciary rule, or is that more to come on that? Do I need to stay tuned to get the rest of that story?
There will be more coming out. if that is indeed, that is my expectation on that. You know, I do a lot of reading. I'm in the business. So
yeah,
that came across my,
that is your day job. Okay. So here's some good news. They did a report, retirement savings in the third quarter hit an all-time record high, according to a report from the guys over at Fidelity. And anyway, we've heard of them. They're pretty reputable, right? So the average 401k balance, you want to know if you're doing better or worse than the average? Boom, boom. Listen up. The average 401k balance, $106,500. The average IRA balance, $111,000. The average 403b, right in the same neighborhood, a little lower though, $85,500. So this is up until the end of September. This is through Q3. I imagine some of that may have taken a little bit of a pummeling with the market volatility that we saw for October. But all of the balances are just about double what they were 10 years ago.
Run that by me again.
Okay, so all these balances are at an all-time high, and they are just about double what they were 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, look what the market's done. Well, let's see, 2018, 08, refresh me. When was the Great Recession?
Yeah, it began in 08.
Okay, yeah, they should be, because they were pretty low at that time. They'd kind of caved, so to speak. You had the Great Recession, the market had the collapse. Yeah, going back 10 years ago, yeah, if it's not double, you missed out.
Well, here's something the numbers are telling me, is that there's a bunch of people out there who aren't saving anything. We know half the country's got nothing saved, and half of the people that do have less than 10
grand. Yeah,
that's
where they kind of, they missed out on this run-up. People have missed out. They've not been a part of this economy. Well, hopefully they are earning more. Hopefully they're having a job. If they lost their job, they should be able to get one now. But if you weren't saving money and accumulating, as you should do as a citizen of this country, we have the responsibility to look out for ourselves and our future. The country does not do it for us completely. They give us one of the legs called Social Security. But outside of that, you should be saving, and you should have been participating then in the prosperity over the past 10 years.
Now, I'm really growing in fascination with this group of people, the 401k millionaires, because we talk about how this number is just growing by leaps and bounds. At the end of the third quarter, the number of people with $1 million or more in their 401k increased to 187,400 people. That's an increase of 41% from a year ago. 10 years ago, there was only 19,000 people that were 401k millionaires.
We see a lot of them.
It's so hard to do, because what's the limit on what you can put in a 401k every year? If you're self-employed, you can kind of do a bunch of things between you and your spouse that gets it to around 50,000.
Well, look, it wasn't always this amount that you could go and put in, but let's just say over 30 years times 18,000. That's $500,000, $540,000. So knowing on the back end, you've got catch up, you could put up to 24, maybe it's lower, but just, gosh. And then if we put some math to it, some return, yield, growth on the assets. Yeah. And it better look, the norm going forward, the next decade, few decades out, you need to be a millionaire in your 401k and have a million plus to prepare for retirement.
504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Winning at Life. We do this every evening at 7. Yes, it's live financial talk radio. It is the daily wrap. On Saturday, we have a version of it called the weekly wrap, and that's from 10 a.m. to 1 o'clock. 3 hours of money talk radio, financial talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, along with James Parker. Yeah, we'll take your calls. We had an excellent call earlier. I don't know what was up with the guy with all the billionaires working for him, but that was way over my head. If he's
hey, had he needed all his that, own show.
Yeah, if he had all that going on, that's way over my head there, and I'll accept that. 504-260-0995. Yeah, get the phone, make the call. Hey, when you get the phone, download the app, Winning at Life. Your app, you can email me, text me, call me, listen to podcasts.
RSVP for our event next week.
Oh, absolutely. The event. Last one this year. Just mind-boggling what we accomplish with these events and do for people, the information we put out. But we're having a lot of fun. It's a wine, wisdom, and food pairing. Yeah, so we're going to have a few different wines paired with a few courses at Ruth's Chris. You know, the food's always good. And I don't even have to tell you what the main course is, and it'll be sizzling paired with a bold Cabernet. Oh, and that'll be fun. And we're going to talk about multiple streams of income, risk, correlating that to your assets, and how to reduce and balance volatility. Wes Blanchard is going to be our guest as well. He's got three key points he wants to talk to you about estate planning. He's going to share some ideas with you, and we're going to give you pointers throughout the event, takeaways, something that you can actually move forward with, put into effect the next day and the next month and over the next year. And we'll give you an opportunity if you want to come in the office and visit with me further. We'll let you do that as well. But I'm going to charge you $10 to attend. Yeah, I'm serious. I'm going to charge you $10. I should charge you $100 for it because the value of what you're getting. Remember, this is Ruth's Chris. Wine, wisdom, and food. And I'm going to match it, and we're going to donate it to a local charity, but you're going to get so much out of this. What do you have to do to attend? You probably should call right now and leave a message at the office, and Summer will call you back tomorrow and confirm it. Just a few seats left. We'll get you on a waiting list if you don't call in time, and because there's always a few people cancel at the last moment, then you probably want to get in to next year. But this is significant when we're talking about learning from us and what we do with our guided planning system to help you where you are on the path and where your head is. So the office number for that is 504-832-9200. You can go to my website, gregoryricks.com. You can email info@gregoryricks.com. And once again, that office number. And even if you're saying, heck with the event, I need to get in there and talk to you. You can use this number as well. 504-832-9200. Okay. So when we went to the break, we're talking about the big 401ks and Social Security. So yeah, I had a couple conversations today with couples that had seven-figure 401ks.
That's so impressive.
And I've had several this week, in fact, with seven-figure 401ks. Everybody doesn't come in there with that size. We have a mix, but we also have those come in as well. One in particular, which gets me on the subject of Social Security. So some of these companies on retirement programs that have a pension. And you see this with some of the big Fortune 500 companies where they'll do a Social Security offset. So let's say, just give a hypothetical number. So let's say his pension is $5,000 a month, $60,000 a year. And he's retiring at, say, 59. they give them a Social Security offset, and let's say that offset is $20,000 a year, hypothetically. What does the offset mean? It means if he was to turn on Social Security when he becomes of age, Social Security is going to give him an amount, but being he's retiring early, they give him an offset, meaning they give him a benefit to kind of mirror what he could potentially turn on in Social Security. Typically, they're basing this number on an age 65 number. But that offset's going to stop when you're eligible for Social Security. So he's retiring at 59, hypothetically. And yeah, these numbers do not represent anybody I've talked to this week, and it's just a variation. It's nothing accurate to anything, but we can still get the message across without using real numbers, which in the case I'm thinking about actually is larger. But okay, the pension $60,000, Social Security offsets $20,000. So he's getting $80,000 a year up until he becomes Social Security eligible.
Full retirement age or 62?
62 is what generally you see. Once you become eligible, they stop with the Social Security offset. So now his pension, his core pension is $60,000 is how I refer to it. However, if he turns the Social Security on at 62, it's probably going to be less than what that offset was. So technically, where we have people retiring at, and so they've got about a, because typically retiring right now, you're 66-ish on FRA, 66 in a few months. So he's retiring, and at 62, the offset stops. So basically, he's got 4-year gap there. But if they turn Social Security on at 62, they'll take a lesser amount, which might be less than what that offset is. So when we're having these discussions, everybody might not quite understand. And one of the important things is this paperwork. When you work for the company that's providing this for you, and they give out these description and numbers, when you come in to talk to me, you really need to bring those papers with you so we can see what those numbers are. Because like today, in a case where I built in numbers, he said his offset, we're using the same number. So yeah, my pension's 60,000, my offset's 20,000, but at age 62, that stops and my Social Security comes on and it's the same number. Okay, I believe he's accurate and knows what he's saying. I still want to see those numbers there. So that is something to understand that change, or you might not want to turn it on at 62. You might want to wait to 65, let it become a larger payment, or wait to FRA. So then we would fill the gap with some of the money from the 401k, for example, is to fill that gap there until Social Security turns on, then stop or reduce what's coming from assets subject to what their income needs are. But we need to verify this to make sure we have the assumptions that we're looking at on the guided planning system, see how the next 15 years looks for you, to see what that looks like going forward. You've never heard this discussion before, have you?
Not the offset. No, this is pretty cool stuff.
It's not the norm, but it's out there when you see people retire.
You want to hear what this sounds like through a novice filter then? Because I'm thinking,
yeah, let's hear.
All right, so let's run out with this new information that I have. What about the scenario of I want my Social Security to be the biggest it can possibly be? I want to turn it on at age 70. However, novice head says you're going to fill in that gap with the IRA, and then you're going to have to turn around and take RMDs on that IRA at age 70 and a half, and you're turning on your Social Security at age 70. So you're creating a separate little complexity there. So filling in the gaps, simple.
In a sense, what we were doing in the case today, turning on the pension, showing the Social Security, showing the wife's Social Security, which has already started because it's a disability, and then turning on income from assets to bring up to what he's used to making now. He could retire now, or he could wait a little bit longer. I think he probably maybe has 2 more years to go. But some of that is plugging in already with income from assets. So the other scenario is, do I wait and see what the math says about that?
I'm James Parker. We're Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
So as I'm explaining to James on the break, on a case I worked on recently where the person was telling me, I need $180,000. If you just joined us, I'm Gregory Ricks, host of Winning at Life. It's live financial talk radio. We have a few minutes left. James Parker, I was referring to, co-host extraordinaire of the show. Right?
You're pretty good. Sometimes I'm just ordinary. I'm not extraordinary. Okay.
Hey, 504-260-0995. Get the phone, make the call. If you need some help, questions, guidance, thoughts, or you just have too much money, we'll see what we can help you with on that too. We had one of those callers earlier. I couldn't help him. He had too much.
Yeah. Okay. But listen, whenever you bring up these new topics, I've been doing this show for 8 years and I don't get to feel this much anymore. Feels like when you're on the merry-go-round, someone just spins you around, you know, you just get wore out even though you're sitting there.
But I brought up this topic really because of when you have the Social Security offset, and it's not necessarily matching up, where he gave me the numbers that it was matching up from now throughout retirement, that when the offset stops, Social Security turns on, typically it's not matching up. And that's why I suggest we kind of need to see this paperwork. Overall, it's a win-win for him. He's got plenty of 401k assets. His wife's got retirement assets. They're in great shape there. From a distribution standpoint, we were showing them $40,000 a year in distributions from assets. Really not making a dent in the 401ks. And then at 71, his required minimum distribution that year would be about $84,000. And when we're in the income we're kicking out now is a gross amount that, cause he asked me, well, I'd like to retire on what I'm making now. And I looked at his numbers and I said, yeah, you can do that. What? I can. So I went through the numbers with him and actually I said, see, but here's the thing. You wanted to get this gross number and yeah, I can make it happen but you're not needing that much. If you're kind of looking at what you're netting, cause you're not paying Social Security taxes and whatever other fees there, FICA and Medicare tax, you know, all these things that's deducted from your check. Oh, that $18,000 a year you're putting away and say, you're not doing that anymore, but I've grossed you up to where you were. So you've got a surplus in income. And as it stands in what, 12 years, when you have to start taking required minimum distributions, those distributions that we show you taking are going to more than double. So you have a cushion there. He looked at me at the end of the meeting. He was like, wow. Wow. I can't believe this. I can really retire. I said, yeah, it's just a matter of when. Now, if you work longer, this just gets better, and that's okay, too.
This is the fellow that's 59?
Yeah, it was kind of that moment. Like, wow. It happens. And sometimes they come in there worried, or the wife's worried. And then, you know, I see this. The wife's worried. It's like, I'm worried, you know. Is it about him being around too much? No, I'm worried about the money. Are we going to have enough? And then by the end of the meeting, she's got a big old smile on her face once you go through the numbers. Now, it's not like that every time because we go through the math. The math tells the truth. And there was one not too long ago that we had set up the follow-up visit. And he said, and when my team followed, confirmed with him, he said, no, I'm not coming back in for a while. In that meeting, Gregory showed me I'm going to be better off. I've got to work a few more years for the numbers to work. So I'll talk to you in the future.
Not a bad answer.
It is the truth and you don't need to help. Oh yeah, you'll be fine. No, you're not going to be fine. The math shows it. When we go through the guided planning system and I start working in their income or rental income, Social Securities, the pension, the distribution from assets, and what you're needing, and this might not be, well, I want to retire and live on what I'm making now. Some of this conversation's a lot of the time is, what do you need to pay the bills every month? Because it's kind of two-part. What do you want to have as income for retirement? They want an income replacement. Okay. Or, well, I need $4,000 a month to pay the bills, and I'd like to travel some. Okay. That's a number to work with. We can work back and gross it up so that he nets that money if the multiple streams of income will generate that and it goes the right way. Otherwise, if it's showing a spend down, well, it's not time yet.
Well, let's count up that couple streams of income, because you always stress this. Number one is going to be fellas pension. So there's one. They both have a Social Security stream that's going to be coming in. So we're up to three. They both have assets of their own. So right there, I'm already up to five, and I don't even know the rest of their story. I don't even know.
Yeah, there's five, six streams there.
So that's people just stacking it up, and it sounds like net, he's going to get a raise when he retires.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, this was actually, technically, yeah, he's netting more income when he retires. Great story. But the important part here is understanding that Social Security offset there. And there is a gap coming in the future, because another part of the conversation we realize at the end that we weren't necessarily on the same page of the pension amount. Because is this a full pension based upon his life, or is this with spousal continuation? And he wasn't sure. So we had a conversation, which also got a look from him like, oh, I didn't think about this. But we talked about it because I said, there's two Social Security checks coming in. Guess what? One of you is going to move on before the other. That smaller check she's getting, that one's going away. So what if half the pension goes away? You know, we're talking about, what was that, $40,000 a year gap?
Yeah.
There. So we have to make sure these numbers are right, and needing to look at all that paperwork shows the Social Security offset, the pension, the choices. Is this because typically if you're going to their site and printing this, you know, it makes it seem seamless, and that pension number, they're probably quoting you on 100% to his life, not spousal continuation. So that's why I want to go through that and ask questions and talk about that. Then we have this discussion. Well, can't that be made up elsewhere? And I said, well, yeah, you could. But actually, when we go shopping for life insurance and such to take that, well, what if I take the 100% to based on my life instead of spousal continuation, and take that difference I'm keeping and spend that on something? I say, usually the math does not work. What you're going to ultimately see, and I did this last week for a family, and they're going to take the reduction and have 100% spousal continuation because the money would not buy enough insurance that was needed. And what I told him, I said, really, when we run the comparisons, and I'll run the numbers for you, no problem, but you're going to see that when they're pricing that to you on spousal continuation, it is very efficient. It's a good pricing that they're giving you.
And that would be frightening in the opposite scenario, because if he passes away without taking care of this, one Social Security check goes away and that pension goes away. That's two of the five streams of income we've identified, but it's the bigger ones. That pension's huge.
Yeah.
And she had a sizable
$60,000 in pension. Yeah, that's a pretty good amount. And then thinking of the smaller Social Security check going away. So that's why I even said if it was 50%, and what I said, we want to make sure we're maxing the spousal continuation. We don't, in his case, because he's not really stressing the 401ks. I said, you've got enough there even if the pension's a little bit less. You know, say it's $400 or $500 a month less. It's not going to hurt you because of what you've done on the 401k side. It's going to be fine.
What's another great story from your day job? What do you do? A snow cone stand? Is that what you're doing? Tell them about your day job, Gregor.
I'm a financial advisor, money manager, and that's part of what we talked about with these couples as well this week is what we do on the money management side, that we really are there looking at the accounts, what's going on in the market, looking at their positions. It's not lip service. We trade in-house. I'm the final say on buys and sells. We are there overseeing everything. It's not handed off to some satellite in another planet or universe. We are handling it, and it gives you great confidence that you can speak to the people that are making the decisions. If you would like a conversation, relaxed, no pressure, you just simply call my office, 504-832-9200, or go to gregoryricks.com.
Thank you very much for hanging out with us today. We do it 6 days a week. So come back and hang out with us tomorrow at 7 o'clock. And then we'll be back on Saturdays, 10 to 1. In the meantime, your home away from the show is winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is for educational and entertainment purposes only and does not recommend the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Gregory Ricks is an investment advisor representative with Global Financial Private Capital. Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is a copyright of Down South Strategies for the private use of our audience. Find podcasts and contact info in the Winning at Life app and winningatlife.com. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.